Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, October 7th, 2020. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. And Taylor, we start with this sad news that we got yesterday about Eddie Van Halen. Yeah, and Taylor, you think about all the people who played guitar through the years. When Eddie Van Halen played, you knew exactly who it was. was so distinct in his style. He was so good at it. And I always tell people all the time when they ask me about covering baseball, I say, the cool thing is I get to talk to people who are the best in their field. And that's the way it felt about Eddie Van Halen. He was the best at what he did.
Yeah, it's totally sad news. I grew up a big classic rock guy, and I know his guitar is famously painted, and he threw the tape on there. My parents would not let me take apart and paint my guitar like that, like I wanted to when I was younger. So I did just string bits of electrical tape all over it as an homage to Eddie Van Halen. So sad news yesterday. Yeah, well, he will be missed sorely.
Well, today in the podcast, a great opportunity. We're going to be talking with Jake Odorizzi, the longtime pitcher, most recently for the Minnesota Twins, about what happened. It's going on in the playoffs, different events, different decisions made during the playoffs yesterday. A lot of insight from Jake. First off, yesterday, Braves and Marlins started their series, and in the bottom of the first inning, Ronald Acuña Jr. did what Ronald Acuña Jr. tends to do.
The 0-1. This ball is driven to right, and it is deep, and he is staring at it like it ain't coming back, and it's gone. What a start for Ronald Acuña Jr. A home run deep to right field off Sandy Alcantara, and it's 1-0 Braves.
Now, the Marlins would come back pretty quickly yesterday against Max Fried.
3-1. Fastball driven, and that one's going to get down. Cooper will touch third. He'll be waved in. And how about it? The third single and fourth hit of the inning and another run. 4-1 Marlins. They lead the Braves on Brian Anderson's RBI single.
That was the Rabbit Train. Our friend Carl Ravitch on ESPN Radio working alongside Tim Kirkchin. Well, in the bottom of the third inning, with the Marlins leading 4-1, Ronald Acuña Jr. came to the plate again, and this is what happened.
Run a heater in on Albies right here. He went oppo, hit that ball, here it comes.
Not like that.
Whoa.
Not that, obviously.
And here we go.
Yeah. Well, Ronald Acuña Jr. has been through this before with the Marlins. Remember, this was a back and forth that took place when Jose Urania ended up hitting Acuña. And now the umpires are going to get into it. Alcantara and Acuña were getting near one another. Ron Washington, the third base coach and former manager, has to settle Acuña down.
Yeah, the Marlins have hit him a bunch. That was the sound from FS1. You heard the analysts there, A.J. Pierzynski, Adam Wainwright, talking about the situation. After Acuña was hit, he turned and faced the Marlins dugout and spread his hand as if he was telling them, look, this is how many times you've hit me in the past. He was clearly unhappy about it, but he also wasn't going to do anything that would get him thrown out of the game. This hit-by-pitch wound up costing the Marlins. Marcell Ozuna at the plate.
First pitch to Ozuna. That's laced into left field. That's by the dive of Brian Anderson. Acuña hits third. He will be waved in by Washington. Here's the throw home. Safe is Acuña with good speed. And an RBI double for Ozuna. So it didn't work if that was the intent. And the Braves have cut the lead in half.
And then in the bottom of the seventh inning, with the Braves trailing, they exploded.
2-2. Ripped into left field. That's going to get down. That's going to tie the game. An RBI for Ozuna. And the Braves have runners at first and second as Mr. September delivers in October for the Braves to tie it at 4.
Travis d'Arnaud came to the plate for the Braves.
And this ball is driven deep to center field. Back goes Sierra at the wall, leaping over the wall. Travis d'Arnaud, a three-run home run. It's 7-4 Braves, and d'Arnaud 3-for-3 today.
And the Braves win this game 9-5, taking a 1-0 lead in the best-of-five series. Afterwards, Sandy Alcantara, the pitcher for the Marlins who hit him, talked about the situation.
When Acuña took a few steps forward, what did he say to you?
I mean, if he coming to me, I would get him. You know, it doesn't matter what happened. If he's ready to fight, I'm ready to fight too. Don't matter what happened.
I don't know, Taylor. I don't think that sort of suggests that he was just pitching inside. He was ready to fight. You could see in his body language as that was playing out.
It's so bizarre, man. Like, don't throw a ball that he's going to hit out of the park. Like, what are we doing here? And then you want to fight him over it in a playoff game? Like, I don't understand what's happening here.
No, I'm going to ask Jake Odorizzi about that and how he felt about this situation. Sandy continued to talk about how he's going to pitch to Acuña.
I mean, if something happened, you know, I just tried to go inside against him, you know, and I hit it. And I don't know why they all were thinking, like, every time we hit Acuña, it's purpose, you know. We all tie pitching inside to him, and we keep throwing inside to him, don't matter what happened.
Here's Marlins manager Don Mattingly.
I knew he didn't hit him on purpose. You know, with Acuña, he's a guy, you can't just lay the ball out over the plate and... You know, and obviously that ball, I looked at it, it was a good ways in, but he's trying to run the ball off the plate in there or run it, started on the plate, run it off, and it got further out than what he wanted, so or further in than what he wanted. And then in the seventh, again, we thought his stuff was good in the sixth. He was still 97, 98. Then we get to Freddie there. Once the two ground balls get through, you know, we felt like Yimmy was probably our next best guy. In that part of the order, and we just went there.
As you can imagine, Braves manager Brian Snitker had a different view of Acuña getting hit.
You know, he hit a long homer and got hit with a 97. I mean, it's my reaction wasn't good, so, you know, it was unfortunate. I'm sure I guarantee you the kid wasn't trying to hit him. But, you know, in that situation, I think if you're going to go in, you got to make sure if you go in, you don't hit him. I mean, and it comes to a point where you keep dinging that kid that you're, you know, that middle of the plate's been taken away. So, you know, it was just, it's happening too much to that boy. Like I say, you got to be careful going in after somebody hits a homer because you might hit him. And, it's just, you know, you better be good at going in and not hitting them after a homer.
Late in the day, Ronald Acuña Jr. tweeted out, "They have to hit me because they don't get me out." So he got the final word on that situation. Game two of that series later today on ESPN Radio. Astros and A's played the second game of their series, and George Springer, boy, he had himself a day.
And here's the lefty firing. Swing and a high fly ball. That ball is deep left center. Back it goes. Back it goes. It's gone. Up into the pavilion and out of here. Springer with another home run in postseason play. That's a two-run shot. The Astros are on top 2-1.
Dave O'Brien on ESPN Radio. Springer wasn't done.
His first pitch swing. He goes after it. A high fly ball driven deep to left field. It is gone. That one deep up into the stands. Springer does not wait around. And for the second time in the inning, the Houston Astros hit an absolute shot, and they lead it 5-2.
After Houston's 5-2 win, Springer talked about his postseason play.
I'm just trying to help the team win. And two, I mean, it's the playoffs. And, you know, this is supposed to be fun. You got to enjoy it because, like I've said before, and I believe it is, you don't know if you're ever going to get back here. So the times that you are here, you might as well try to have fun.
Dusty Baker, the Astros manager, was asked after the game about Zach Greinke, who some people thought was going to start game one, and his answer surprised reporters.
Well, you know, I can't really say right now, but, you know, he's dealing, you know, he has some soreness in his arm. And so, you know, he went to be observed by the doctor. So, you know, we don't have those results yet.
And afterward, he played catch out in Dodger Stadium, and the Astros will be waiting to hear from them about what Greinke's status is going forward. The Rays and the Yankees. And you remember the decision by the Yankees to start Davey Garcia, the rookie, for his first postseason appearance at age 21. Bottom of the first inning, Garcia started to pitch, and immediately Jay Happ was up in the Yankees bullpen beginning to warm up. As that was happening, this is what happened for the Rays.
Now the fastball at 94, hit well to deep right field, Judge back, and it's off the top of the wall. It bounces back into play, but that is a home run. off the top of the fence, bounced back in, and a Rosarena has hit another home run, and Tampa Bay takes an early 1-0 lead.
Dan Shulman on ESPN Radio. The Yankees tied the game in the top of the second.
2-2 and a curveball that he sends towards the right field corner, and it's going to go. He lines one out to deep right field, and he's got his fourth home run in as many playoff games.
Now, in the bottom of the second inning, Garcia was out. The left-hander, Jay Happ, was in, and he faced the right-handed hitting Mike Zunino.
The 1-2 on the way, and Zunino lifts a high fly ball to left field. It's pretty well hit. Frazier's back. It's going to go. Zunino with a two-run homer off the facing of the second deck, and the Rays lead 3-1.
So the Rays look to be in great position. They had a 5-1 lead in the top of the fourth inning. Tyler Glasnow was throwing the ball great. But the Yankees got two runners on base, and that guy, Giancarlo Stanton, came to the plate again.
1-1, and another fastball, and it's crushed. Stanton has hit it a mile to left field, way up beyond the second deck, up onto a concourse in front of a bar above the seating at Petco. An absolute ton of a home run, a three-run shot, and all of a sudden, Singy, it's a one-run game.
But the Rays restored order. Nick Anderson helping out.
So we'll see what the Rays are thinking, what Zunino and Anderson are thinking here on this 1-2 pitch. Threw him a slider, and he got him to chase, strikes him out, and the side is retired. What a job by Nick Anderson to strike out all three batters he faces with a couple of men on.
The Rays win this game 7-5 to even the series at 1-1. The Yankees in this game, 18 strikeouts, a new postseason record. 18 strikeouts, 14 balls put in play. Paul Imbecchietti sent that note earlier today. Aaron Boone, the Yankees manager, talked about his decision in the first inning.
Just because they're so good at, you know, their roster's built to take advantage of the platoon advantage. So, you know, felt like, you know, I was going to go to Jay pretty early and aggressively, you know, as long as they went with the heavy lefty lineup, and that was the reason.
It wasn't especially heavy lefty lineup. Five of the nine hitters were left-handed hitters that started for Tampa Bay. Aaron talked about the decision to go with Garcia short.
It was a little lineup base, but, you know, and then kind of labored a little bit through that first inning. Is on the verge of getting out of it, though, with two strikes there with a Rosarena when he gets them, clips them. But, no, that was the plan all along. We're going to go short with him, knowing we would have Davey available, you know, later in the series if need be, too.
Padres and Dodgers started their series last night. That game played in Arlington. Walker Buehler got into trouble early on, walking the bases loaded. This happened.
The 3-2, swing and a miss, struck him out. He pitches his way into and then out of trouble. Three strikeouts in the inning and three walks in the inning. The Padres end up leaving him loaded.
That was Boog Sciambi on ESPN Radio. Starting for the Padres in this game, Mike Clevinger. If you remember, he's only pitched one inning, had only pitched one inning since September 13th because he was dealing with some arm issues. He got clearance from the Padres to go ahead and start game one of the series. Bottom of the second inning, this is what happened.
And a slider is downstairs. Mike Clevinger, the setup on the first base side of the rubber, he looks in. And now Jace Tingler, I think, was looking at the radar gun readings, and he's coming out with a trainer.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. When you saw the first fastball this inning at 91, and this is the one where if you're Clevinger, you don't even want to look him in the eye.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to be in there when they leave.
Tingler out there. The trainer is doing most of the talking. And the plate umpire, Lance Barrett, out there as well. And Mike Clevinger's coming out of this game.
The Padres took the lead in the top of the fourth inning.
The 0-2. Swing and a line drive out towards left field. That's a base hit. Pollock picks it up. Around third and in to score is Myers. The steal and the single by Nola, and the Padres have taken a 1-0 lead.
The Dodgers tied the game in the bottom of the fifth.
Richard says yes. Here comes. Swing and a bouncer right side. On the edge of the outfield turf. Throw to first, and it gets away from Hosmer. Scrambling in to score is Turner. Cronenworth threw it away, and the Dodgers have tied it. It's 1-1. I'm not sure what happened there.
by the way, Kyle Peterson also working with Boog in that game. The Dodgers broke out in the bottom of the sixth inning to take control of this game. Justin Turner had a hand in that.
And the pitch. Swing and a ground ball right side. It squirts through. Here's Betts around third, on his way to the plate. He's in to score. Turner got just enough of it, and it's now 3-1.
And so the Dodgers win this game 5-1. One other note, the Cleveland Indians leadership announced they expect manager Terry Francona back for the 2021 season. He missed 48 games in 2020 due to health reasons.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Dick Odorizzi has pitched 9 seasons in the big leagues for a 3.82 ERA, most recently with the Minnesota Twins. And in 2019, the last full season baseball had, he made the American League All-Star team, posting a 3.51 ERA. And Jake, how do you watch the postseason?
I feel like I dissected more than anything else, put myself in the situation of the pitcher, what I would do in certain instances, maybe pick up on little things. Having pitched in the postseason, it's a different mindset. It's a different feel. And obviously this year it's completely different with no fans, because the fans, I feel like, are a huge part of the postseason and really give you that home field advantage. But, it's fun to sit back and watch, you know, a lot of these guys face a lot of these guys, seen a lot of the pitchers. So, you know, they're thinking different things in different situations. So it's kind of fun to go along with them and try to piece together maybe what their thought process or what their approach is, because a lot of these matchups we're seeing right now are divisional matchups. So that means they've seen each other a lot of times, and seeing, you know, what kind of adjustments each side makes.
Yeah, especially with the format that we have now, where you're going to have five games in 5 days in the division series, that changes things. But when you're watching, like, for example, yesterday there were 4 games, how much and how did you watch that? Do you have the TV on when the Braves and Marlins get going yesterday, or are you sort of checking in and checking out with your two young kids?
Yeah, kind of checking in and checking out. I try to watch some of just about every game, but it's a little bit easier said than done. Like you said, when you got little ones, when you got to mix in nap time and just running around being kids, being outside. So I caught a little bit of the back half of the Marlins Braves, and then a little bit of the Astros and the A's. But then I was able to sit down and kind of watch the Yankees Rays matchup, and then just a little bit of the late evening matchup, and then it's bedtime. So I kind of watch some highlights, read about what's been going on, just so I can kind of see what's going on with series and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, it's a pretty good gig right now to just be chasing around your kids. And then when you take a break, you get to watch some baseball for a while.
So yesterday, I think the big, if you would call it controversial decision, I remember once, and I've told this story in the podcast before, I knew Bruce Bochy back when he became the manager of the Padres back before the 95 season. And when he was managing the Giants, I'd go up to him during the postseason and say, "Boch, I'm trying to keep up. Are you an idiot or a genius today?" And it always seems to be through the prism of the result. You know, if it doesn't work out, then the manager's a knucklehead. But I got to tell you, as Aaron Boone, who's a friend who I worked with, as that was playing out yesterday, where, you know, they start Davey Garcia, his first start in the postseason, his first appearance, the youngest starter for a Yankee in a postseason game since Whitey Ford in 1950. And then they bring in Jay Happ after an inning. You know, you're someone who's uniquely qualified to sort of evaluate that because you played with the Rays and you understand how they use matchups. I disagreed with it because I felt like that whatever advantage you glean potentially maybe with one lefty-righty matchup, you lose by having two pitchers kind of out of their comfort zone. What was your take on it?
It was a unique one. I was sitting there watching the show half warming up, and it was a little head-scratching because typically, you know, as we all know, the opener is usually a relief pitcher, and you bring them in to face their heart of their order from the get-go, and then it kind of resets it. So when you're not looking to face the order three times in a row, it gives you that extra inning where you get through the six with your starter as opposed to just inning after five. So to do that with a starting pitcher, let alone one of your guys that is, you know, one of your dudes pretty much, especially moving forward, Garcia's I think we saw yesterday, obviously it didn't go as well as he would have wanted, but I feel like he was pretty composed on the mound, pretty stoic for being first playoff start as a young man. So yeah, that's kind of those experiences where you want them to go out there and pitch. That's a big career point. And to, I feel like it has to be pre-planned. You don't just have your other starter down there and getting hot in the first inning on a phone call. Typically, they try to, you know, give you a little bit of a heads up. But, it was a unique one, especially when your first guy could give you length. And in a five-game series with no days off, there might be a point where maybe you're up by a lot or maybe down by a lot or in that middle ground where it's a close game one way or the other and you need about three innings to fill out and the rest of your guys are hanging. That's an important set of innings right there that could be the difference of a win or a loss. So I found it a little bit unique that they had both guys, you know, up and going there in the first inning. And obviously, you know, if they would have won, maybe it looks a little bit different today, but losses always amplify decisions no matter what they were, if it was the right or wrong move, in my opinion.
Do you think that, the potential advantage of with a platoon matchup early in the game is something that potentially makes that worthwhile? Or do you think that it can be overthought, which is what I felt like about last night's game?
Yeah, I think it's overthought from a Yankees standpoint and just for the fact of it's not the norm for them. You know, the Rays do that all the time. They've been doing it for years. You know, they even move pitchers to positions so they can bring in another pitcher and then bring the other guy back in. Like that's the norm for them is the oddity. They're kind of the innovators when it comes to different pitching styles. You know, they've created a lot of different things that a lot of teams follow, but I'm not sure if the Yankees had done that once throughout the year. And it's a tough time in the postseason to do that. And obviously I'm not the manager. I don't know their analytics. I don't know what their bullpen situation looks like, but it was definitely a unique time to do that when you may or may not have ever practiced it or both of them have never done it because as a starter, you know, you want to go out there and give as much length as you can and you're built up to do that. And I thought, during the regular season, Garcia pitched well and so did Happ, down the stretch right there, they were both really good. So yeah, not knowing the full script, it did strike me as odd and just a little bit unique. And you know, now that it ended up being a loss, you're down two pitchers because they're going to need at least 1 or 2 days of rest to be able to be back in there again.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. I mentioned the 5 games in 5 days format is so different than what we're accustomed to with the travel days during the postseason. Typically, in a 5-game series, you'd have 2 off days built in. And you remember back in 2016, for example, the Indians essentially relied on Corey Kluber and 3 relievers through the first rounds because of the off days. How much more of a challenge do you think that it makes it for managers, for pitching coaches? And, you know, what adjustments do you see teams doing early on in terms of trying to offset that?
Yeah, I think it's more of a purist form of the playoffs. Just like you said, if a good team can have 2 starters with off days and they can pretty much get their way into to the World Series when they're on their way up. So now that you put it up 5 games in 5 days, there, I think like it tests your depth, not only as a starting rotation, but your bullpen as well, because I think we saw in game one, John Curtis came in and it didn't go so well for him. And you kind of have to let it ride because there's still another four games to play. You're going to need those arms. And it's unfortunate that it took a bad turn at the end of the game, but that's how it goes in the regular season. And I think that's what you're going to be seeing a lot of, is maybe a little more regular season managing when it comes to certain teams and certain rosters. But, you know, not to leak into my second point, but roster construction, I think, is a huge thing, especially with 28 guys now that are allowed for this postseason. I think it's really important to maybe carry that extra arm that can give you that flexibility as you're moving forward. But as a player, I like it. I think it really can separate teams of depth as opposed to the ones that have a couple of starters and you need to piece together the rest. But in a normal year, you have that luxury. So even bench construction from a position player standpoint, there's going to be situations that arise that if you have, you know, three utility guys and one's the better hitter, you can afford to use him at that point when you know you have a backup for him later on in the game as a defensive substitute. So there's a lot to look into, but I kind of like this style. And as a player, you want to get in routine and, you know, play. So this is normal for us. I feel like the off days in a normal postseason are abnormal when it comes down to a regular one.
What do you see in Giancarlo Stanton as a home run in each of the four games? He had two last night. He's got five. And you pitched against him. I looked up the numbers today. 3 for 11, a home run, and you struck him out five times. What are you seeing in him?
He just seems like he's locked in right now. I mean, I think yesterday was a pretty good show of what he's at right now. I mean, that curveball that he hit was a mistake. But usually when you throw that type of a curveball that's, you know, as bad as it was, no offense to Glass. I mean, we've all done them. When you throw one up there that high, that's usually a not hurt pitch because nobody ever swings at that, let alone hits it out. So that just showcases how strong and how good he's seeing it right now. And you can hit a pitch like that out to right field, especially, and then makes the adjustment the next at bat, turns on, I think it was 96 or 97. And I don't know if StatCast was asleep for that or whatever. There's no way that was 450. That was closer to 550 than 450. So what I see out of him right now is the comfortable player. And I know, you know, he didn't have a lot of at bats during the regular season with some injuries, but he's come back and he's hot, and that's what matters in the postseason. You know, the way, I don't really know the right way to get any player out when they're in the hot streak like that, when you're covering every spectrum of the zone. But, you know, I feel like for me personally, when I was facing him, obviously he's a daunting figure at the plate. He's a massive human up there and covers a lot of the strike zone. You have to get ahead. That's the big thing, is make quality pitches, get ahead. You know, he's such a big guy, usually ends better to bigger guys in a way, cause they can reach that with power. But, you know, once you get ahead, you kind of can dictate the at bat. But yeah, he's really locked in there. And I think it's really good for the game because, you know, he's the type of guy, everybody sitting at home watching that game yesterday was hoping, like, oh, we want to see him really lean into one. Yeah, we have a guy in Minnesota that does it all the time, Sano. Like, you want to see him hit it with everything they have, and that's what he did yesterday. So that's what everybody at home was wanting to see. He gave it to him, and that's really good for baseball, you know, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with you. You want stars to be stars, especially this time of year. The Astros, they win yesterday. They have a commanding lead in their series against Oakland. My sense of them, just having gotten to know the players through the years, you know, spring training was obviously uncomfortable for those guys. The interviews with knuckleheads like me talking about what happened with the sign stealing scandal. And you know, A, there are no fans in the stands, and they're not getting, you know, probably the type of feedback from the stands they normally would. But the other thing, too, is I just feel like they're just so freed up mentally. They just look so relaxed because it's almost like, well, you know what? We can't satisfy people. You know, people aren't going to like us, whatever. We're just going to go play. And you get guys like Springer, Carlos Correa looking great.
Yeah, it's kind of that, you know, I don't want to say villain mentality, but it's something along those lines of, they know, you know, obviously everything that happened, they're not looked upon in the greatest light right now, and there's nothing they can really do about it. So, you know, what is the one thing that you can dictate on your own without caring about public perception? It's just the game in between the lines and going out and play it. You know, everything that happened with them is, you know, not good for the game, not good for a lot of things. But at the end of the day, they're still really good baseball players. And that doesn't change just because, you know, something like that happened, they've still, you know, I think what if they win this series, it'll be the fourth ALCS they made in a row. So even with everything that happened, you know, you still have to be a good player on top of that. And I think that's showing through right now. Maybe they've simplified it. You know, not having fans, I think, is a big help for them. It's not really a hot take or anything like that, especially out in LA right now where they're at. So I'm sure there'd be a lot of people out there just there for a hard time, essentially. So, you know, I've talked with a player or two on their team, and, you know, he wasn't even there for the, for what had happened. And he says, just everywhere you go, it doesn't matter, eat with or without fans, we're still getting ridiculed in the face of the media, social media, and all that type of stuff. But they are, they're a dangerous team. They've been there, they've done it before, and this is almost familiar territory for them. And, you know, we saw it firsthand in Minnesota. They beat us in some close games. They pitched well. They've been pitching well this series, and they come up with the clutch hitch. And like you said about Springer, he looked pretty playoff Springer and Dodger friendly Springer again. I think he's hit 5 or 6 home runs there. And again, another guy that's, when he's locked in, he seems like he's hitting every pitch out as well. You know, he can he can take the neck ball out. He can sit on the breaking ball, and he's a fun player to watch, not only offensively, but defensively too. But when you have a guy like that with power at the start of your lineup, I think that's a different dynamic that teams are, that had the luxury of having a player like that are really at an advantage, especially in the playoffs.
What was your read on what happened in the Braves and Marlins game? Acuna Jr. hits a monster home run, first plate appearance. Next time up, he gets smoked. I didn't pitch in the big leagues. When I saw the pitch, I was like, okay, that doesn't look right. And he was not happy about it. He pointed to the Marlins dugout. He held up his hand, I think referencing the number of times he's been hit by them. And I do think that that's a moment in the postseason that can fire up a team. What do you think?
It certainly looked like it did yesterday. I mean, they kind of took off from that point on and really put the game out of reach in the next couple innings. But, you know, if it was intentional, I don't really agree with it from a lot of standpoints, even in normal situations. I'm just not the type of pitcher that I am. Like, you give up the home run, you give up the home run, so be it. That's how it goes. You don't need to do anything to harm a person after the fact, just because either you made a mistake or they're just a really good player in that certain at bat. So, but the history between him and that team are, I think it's pretty glaring. So, you know, I don't know. I didn't get to see too much of that game, but obviously their guy on the mound is a pretty darn good pitcher, an all-star last year. And I don't know how many other pitches he lost arm side to a righty after that point. That might be interesting to know, but yeah, it's definitely not good for for the game, especially when you have a team like the Braves or you fire them up a little bit and they don't really, you know, don't really need too much help when they're as good of a team as they are. So when you add extra fuel to the fire, that's usually not a good thing for the opposition, especially when it's, you know, Acuna, who is, one of our premier talents in the game. And if you go Oppo upper deck to lead up the game, you did nothing wrong. You don't deserve to be hit. It's make a better pitch next time or change it up. There's no reason for, to get drilled after a plate appearance like that.
Clayton Kershaw starts for the Dodgers tonight. As a pitcher, what do you appreciate the most when you see him on the mound?
Right now, I appreciate just what he's, what he's done in his career. He's transitioned from that hard thrower with everything. You know, this off-speed stuff has never wavered during his times of, you know, his velocity drop or drawback, whatever, you know, everybody wants to call it. And he's still one of the most elite pitchers in the game. I mean, it's incredible the work ethic that I've heard that he has. I pitched with his teammate Rich Hill this year, and I was talking to him about it. I was like, hey, you know, what does Kersh do that is a separator? He said his daily routine is the separator, because he does it every single day at a high intensity, and that is what he knows. And even when he's been banged up, he still continues to do it because he's such a creature of habit. I think that's what gives him his edge, is his work ethic, his drive, his mentality when he, you know, going against everything that he does. So it, for me, I really like it when guys maybe have a blip and then they come back and be dominant again, because that's just, it shows how you persevere as a person, as a player, you make the adjustments. And when you've been in the league this time, everybody knows who Clayton Kershaw is, what, how, you know, what the type of player he is and, you know, what kind of stuff he has, but yet he goes out and dominates every single time. And that's just a separator for me, is when people know what you're going to do to him and you still can't do anything about it. That's when you're a very special player and, you know, a future Hall of Famer down the road. I don't think anybody has to worry about that. So he's a special guy to watch, and I'm looking forward to watching some of his work tonight, because he's one of my favorite guys just to sit back and watch. He's pretty surgical out there with what he does, and it's a fun thing to see.
Jake, my favorite story about him, I went to do a piece on him for SportsCenter and Baseball Tonight, where I'd go and watch him go through an off-season workout. And, you know, he lives very close to where he went to high school down in just outside of Dallas. And, you know, I go down there and I get the camera crew. And so you're figuring that there's going to be like this entourage of two or three vehicles that are going to roll up. There might be a publicist. There might be a trainer. There might be a, you know, the yoga person, whatever. I mean, that's just something I've sort of gotten accustomed to in working on those type of stories. Well, one vehicle rolls up and there's only one person in it, and it's Clayton Kershaw, and he's got a key to the indoor football facility at his old high school. And he goes in there and he goes through his own workout. He goes to the gym to do the weight training. He's all by himself, doesn't have anybody with him. He is just attacking, you know, going through that workout. I thought that was really cool. And it tells you a lot about sort of who he is.
Absolutely. And I think we see it on a 5-day basis. He's fiery out there. He gets going. And I love that. I love when pitchers show emotion on the mound when it's a situation that you wouldn't expect emotion of, because that just shows the perfectionist in us as a starting pitcher, especially, and how you hold yourself. You know, every pitcher that I know usually holds themselves to a higher standard than what the public does. And when you're him and you're viewed as one of the top, and you still have yourself above that, that's what I like to see. And that's the type of person that I personally would love to be around. And you learn from those guys. That's why they're leaders, because you want people to be molded to his mold. And obviously that's way easier said than done, because it's a special person and a special talent to have all that wrapped into one. But when you have a guy like that on your staff, you just sit back and try to soak up as much information as you can, because it doesn't come by all that often, and you're not fortunate to have those guys on your roster year in and year out.
All right. Tell me, as we go into the wintertime for you, what are you looking for in terms of free agency? What's your expectation about what's going to happen this winter? Because I think a lot of even folks at the team level are wondering what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting from a certain aspect. It'll be, you know, it might be slow early on for everybody as everyone's trying to get their bearings on what just happened with the season and what the off season layout is even going to be looking like at the end of, you know, new usual formats. But, you know, I expect there to be a lot of interest. I don't think four starts is telling of me as a pitcher or my career or whatever it is. I think my consistency over my entire career is what is the most important thing. You know, it's a year. I think everybody realizes this year was a oddity and whatever, maybe hopefully we never have to experience one again when it comes to a lot of the things that we all had to go through. But, you know, I had some weird things happen to me. I got drilled in the chest, a quick blister at the end of the year to go on top of that. So it wasn't exactly the most favorable season to go out there, but at the end of the day, you know, looking back on it, there's so many pitchers with arm injuries that, you know, teams are going to fill these holes, but, you know, all of next year for a lot of them. A lot of them were season ending injuries. And I feel pretty fortunate that none of the stuff that happened to me was arm related. And when I was able to be out there with the data that we have nowadays and the analytics, I know the stuff that I had on raw paper was the exact stuff I had in 2019. So there was no drop off or, you know, whatever it is. It's just how it goes in four starts. I was looking at some stuff the other day, and you know, my four starts weren't as ideal as I wanted them to be, but I had a month last year where it was even worse than what that was. And I think it was for five or six starts, and I still had the best year of my career. So taking a snapshot of a shortened season, I don't think is a good evaluation. I think there needs to be hopefully some evaluation from an in-depth look of, I mean, we have the data to do it. We have the numbers to do it. So it'll be interesting to see what teams dive deep into guys that they like. But I expect there to be a lot of interest in me. I know what type of pitcher I am. I know what I can bring to a team, a good team. And I'm excited for it. Not going into it with a qualifying offer will be different for me. It won't be as rushed as it was this past season, but it'll be hopefully be a good one at the end. And I'm looking forward to talking with teams, talking with pitching coaches, and really trying to get to know systems, because that's, you know, winning is the most important thing to me now at my point in my career. And there's a lot of teams out there that got the taste of winning this year, which I think is good for baseball with the expanded playoffs, and hopefully making that pitch to stay in that winning culture or continue on the winning path that they're on. So I feel like I can give, you know, pretty much all 30 teams some help. So, you know, we'll sit back and wait and see how everything goes. But I'm personally excited for it. And yeah, I'll be ready to go once the World Series is over and we can start doing off-season things again.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think you're going to get a lot of interest because a lot of teams now are looking for bedrock in rotations. And that's been demonstrated throughout your career. Jake, great stuff today. I love your insight because, as I said, you played, I didn't. And I feel like I'm speaking out of school. So thanks for the time and great to talk with you.
Absolutely, Buster. Happy to do it. It's always fun to talk and give whatever insight I can bring to the situation. If it's right, wrong, or indifferent, it's always good to talk baseball with you.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Numbers Game.
Sarah Lang's a reporter and a producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, topic of the day, as we just talked about with Jake, Aaron Boone's decision at the outset of the Yankees game. I really feel like they overthought it. I think it would have been a lot better if they just started Jay Happ, because I don't really think they got much of an advantage when it came to, you know, trying to dictate decisions that the Rays made. What'd you make?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, the attempt seemed to be, you know, the kind of bait and switch, you know, kind of like the Wade Miley and Brandon Woodruff that the Brewers did against the Dodgers a couple of years ago. Of course, he only faced Miley, who started the game, only faced one batter in that. So a little bit different than Davey Garcia pitching the entire first full inning. But it did feel like maybe it got overthought a little bit too much. I mean, Garcia looked fine. I was interested to see how deep he could go. And you just wonder, I mean, they're still in a good spot with Tanaka going today. But if you can get length out of any starter in any situation, I feel like that has to be the goal, especially in this postseason with everything we've seen. And so the fact that you end up sort of burning two guys seems to, you know, work against what they're trying to do here.
Plus all the relievers that came in behind them, because it didn't go well early in the game. Let's play the numbers game.
Number three.
So speaking of pitchers, number three is nine. So the Padres used nine pitchers last night, which tied the postseason record. But that's not that rare of a thing because they've already done that now three times this postseason. So they're the first team in postseason history to use nine pitchers in a game three times in a single postseason. Even if it was extra inning games, anything else, they are the first team to use nine pitchers in a game three times in a single postseason. They've used at least eight in every game they've played this postseason. And just watching the Padres, the pitching, obviously, they've been hit with injuries. We saw Clevinger leave the game last night injured early, and Dinelson Lamet has not made it back to the roster at any point since they've made it to the postseason. But you just watch that and you wonder who can pitch and who's not going to be tired because they're using so many guys.
Number two.
Number two is 52.9%. So thus far in the 2020 postseason, that's how many percent of runs have scored via the home run. 52.9%, basically 53%. That includes yesterday in the Yankees and Rays game, the first nine runs of the game were all scored on home runs. So that rate of 52.9% would be the second highest for a single postseason if it were to end up that way. The top three list was 53.5% in 1956, and then 52.1% in 1957, then 50.9% in 2017. So that 2017 number is sort of the one we want to keep an eye on, considering that's when there was actual expanded playoffs, not just a World Series.
Number one.
Number one is four. So Giancarlo Stanton has now homered in four straight postseason games, which is tied for the third longest single postseason streak all time. The only streaks longer than that, so what he'll be going to continue with if he homers again today, are 2015 Daniel Murphy, who homered in six straight, and 2004 Carlos Beltran, who homered in five straight. And Stanton's the third player to homer in each of his team's first four games of a single postseason, joining 1996 Juan Gonzalez and 1987 Jeffrey Leonard. But since they weren't on the other list I just said, you can tell they did not extend those streaks to five straight. So he would be the first player to homer in each of his team's first five games of a postseason if he were to homer today. And he already is the only Yankees player to homer in four straight games in a single postseason. I mean, it's, you know, exactly what you want to see from him. And that second home run, 118.3 miles an hour off the bat last night.
Yeah, I loved Ron Darling's reaction on the broadcast. Like, I haven't seen a hitter do that to a baseball ever. That was a lot of fun. Before you go, what was your take on what happened with Ronald Acuna Jr. in his first two plate appearances? Because I thought they threw at him the second time. Not they, just the pitcher.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we'll never hear the exact answer to intent. We always know that, but it certainly felt pretty suspicious. You see the home run, you see the bat flip, you see how he, and it was great. I mean, he was the youngest player in postseason history to lead off home run. He's starting off his team in this great spot after they had had so many postseason issues prior to 2020. I was so excited for him with that home run and then to see him come up and get hit. And we know what's happened with the Marlins. Obviously, Jose Urania is hurt during this series, but we know all of that that happened. And that was leadoff home runs as well. So it certainly felt like, you know, something may have been intentional. But I mean, regardless, I love what he did on Twitter and Instagram after the game. You know, he said they hit me because they can't get me out. And he posted something on Instagram as well. I mean, I love seeing that personality come out. I'd rather it not come out with the idea of someone getting hit by a really fast baseball pitch coming at them. But I like that we're seeing this side of Acuna and that it's getting that national stage. So at the very least, there is that.
All right, Sarah, thanks for doing this. Always great to talk with you.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster, Bleacher Tweets for Wednesday coming in. Michael Preston at McP1979 writes in, do you think the Yankees just lost themselves the series by using two quality starters in a loss and also killing the confidence of a possibly great young pitcher by using him as part of a trick play? Surely they are a better team than this.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't go that far. I mean, it's still early in the series. It's 1-1, and they could obviously fight their way back, and Garcia's only 21. And he can fight his way back. But I do think it was a mistake. Taylor, I didn't get your take on this.
Yeah, I think it was a mistake. I think he definitely overthought it, but I don't think it's a backbreaker. I mean, Garcia will still be available. You know, like you said, early in the series here, unfortunate they couldn't take advantage of all the offensive output from Giancarlo Stanton, but it'll be okay. Tanaka gives him a great chance to win today. Next up, we got Andrew David Lawther at Andy Tangles. He's got two for us. First up, he writes, what is the thought process behind allowing fans in the stands for the World Series? It really does go against what the league has achieved all year. Love the pod from Sydney, Australia.
Yeah, well, first off, they're letting them in the stands to make money and maybe to add to the ambiance a little bit. But the biggest thing is to make money. Bill Shaken of the LA Times had an interesting story that he posted last night that the fans who were let into those games are not going to have their temperatures taken. That every person who's letting these ballparks, athletic trainers, players, staffers, they have their temperatures taken before they walk in. They're not doing that with fans. I don't get that. Like, I don't understand why, the fans coming in the stands wouldn't be held to the same standard as the players. And I know that they're going to be held away from the players per se, but I think we know enough about the coronavirus to know we don't know everything about the coronavirus.
Right. I saw that LSU is doing that with football games, too. They were like, oh, well, it's just taking too long to get people in the stands. Like, really? That's our concern here? I don't know. Andrew, his other question is, could Arenado be the solution to the Cardinals offense? They seem to be at a crossroads offensively. What do you think about that hypothetical?
Yep, I agree. I think there's potentially a natural match there. It's going to come down to how motivated are the Rockies after this ugly financial year to dump Arenado's contract? And on the flip side, how much money are the Cardinals willing to take on?
Next up, we got Mr. Every Other Inning right fielder. He writes in, you talked about the location of new teams, but why not a state that does not have a major sports team or put a team at the Field of Dreams? And this guy must really love the Field of Dreams field if he thinks that Major League Baseball would ever put a team there.
No, I mean, they're only going to put ball teams where there are a lot of fans. I grew up in central Vermont. There are a lot of baseball fans there, friends who are baseball fans. Central Vermont could not support a baseball team. And the Field of Dreams field, while it'd be fun for about a week, after a while, the question would be, okay, who's going to come through the cornfield to watch them play?
Right. Last one for today, Andrew Campbell at Real Camp Drew writes in, hey, Buster, why does the let the kids play theme only apply to hitters? Headhunting is bad, but a pitcher can still brush back a batter and have some quote-unquote fun on their own. But people get upset, yet hitters can bat flip and celebrate home runs as wild as they want. Double standards? What do you think?
Yeah, it's interesting. Trevor Bauer was tweeting out last night about this, basically saying, hey, if Acuna Jr. hits a home run like that, then go ahead, do what you want. And if you strike him out, then you get to do what you want. I do think that and it always comes down, as we've talked about many times, to the pitchers, right? They're the ones holding the ball in their hands. If they want to take a shot at the hitter, they can do that. In the past, you've always heard stories. Well, that guy was a tough pitcher. He drilled a hitter. I always thought it was gutless, like to throw at a prone target. Yeah. Ronald Acuna Jr. in that situation is a prone target. I mean, Brian Snitker said he didn't throw at him on purpose. I don't know. That one was way inside. I think he was reckless in how he threw that pitch, at the very least.
He threw at him on purpose. Come on. This is so silly. And I think with what Andrew's saying, you can still brush him. I don't know. I think there's a huge difference between throwing a ball at someone in a bat flip. So if pitchers want to go wild with their celebrations, I would certainly welcome that and endorse it. But I think there's a big difference between, a bat flip and then throwing at someone who's just standing there.
Yep, exactly.
Thanks for writing in, everyone. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Please subscribe to, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
That's it for today. My thanks to Jake Odorizzi, to Sarah Langs, and to Taylor Schwenk. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.